Eric Metaxas is a number one New York Times best-selling author. He's written many books. His latest book is Atheism Dead? But that's not what we're going to focus on this particular portion of Vocal Point, although we'll certainly mention it. We're going to talk about a book he wrote a few years ago called If You Can Keep It, and it's all about America and what our founders intended. Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. And Eric Metaxas, it's a privilege to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's my honor. Anytime, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, okay, sure. How about next week? All right, I'm just kidding. Let's go. First of all, before we get into If You Can Keep It, let's talk about the new book coming out. The new book, Is Atheism Dead?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, the books go together because I think I make the case in If You Can Keep It that there is no way you can have freedom on the American model, self-government that we've enjoyed for all these years, without people of faith, robust faith. If you don't have enough of them in the country, in a way, the whole thing goes away. And we haven't really made that case effectively. So I think it's important to make that case. But before you make that case, you have to let people know what we believe as Christians is true. It's not a philosophy. It's not a nice idea. It is absolutely true. And I find it ironic in the extreme and delightful that God allows us at this late date, 2021, to have access to science that points to him in a way that nothing has ever pointed. It's like he saved the best for last. And we have evidence from science. Most people are not aware of it, which is why I said I've got to put it in this new book called Is Atheism Dead? Because it is astonishing and it's open and shut. It's not even like, well, I interpret it differently. If you interpret it differently, it means you don't want to see what's obvious. And the fact is, God has allowed us through a few areas of science to see that he created the universe. We didn't have the science to see this even a few decades ago. Now it's become overwhelming. The same thing with some things from biblical archaeology. I talk about the discovery of biblical Sodom and other things that are astonishing. And you think, wow, why did the Lord allow us now to see these things? I think it's because Scripture says when the enemy comes in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord raises up a standard against it. I think things have gotten so dark in America that God has appointed this time to reveal some extraordinary evidence and proof for his existence, for the veracity of the Scripture. So it's hard for me not to get excited about that because I know that the more people know the truth of the Christian faith, the more inclined they're going to be to bring that into the sphere of politics and to help us to remain free in America.
Well, the founders said that our rights come from the Creator, and since you're talking about atheism, which is a challenge to the view that God is the Creator, that there isn't even a God or the God of the Bible, can you give us one example of this new startling information that we have, and then when you're finished with that, then we'll get into the founders and If You Can Keep It book that you wrote
sure.
a few years ago.
Sure. The first example comes from what's called fine-tuning. Some people know a little bit about this, but it was Christopher Hitchens, the arch-atheist, who was asked one day, what is the strongest argument from the other side for the existence of God? And in a rare moment of candor, because he could be very nasty and take no prisoners, he said, without any question, it's the fine-tuned argument, the idea that there are things in this world, in the universe, on the chemical level, on the level of almost every level of creation that are so exquisitely fine-tuned that today science can look at it and say, holy cow, this can't be a coincidence. How is this possible? I'll give you one silly example, but it's easy to get. The planet Jupiter, largest planet in our solar system, but it's so far away, it's more than four times farther away from us than the sun, right? The sun is like 93 million. This is 400 million miles away from us. Of course, in the night sky, if you ever see it, it's a tiny, tiny pinprick, science tells us today what it didn't know a few decades ago. It says that if it were not for that tiny pinprick in the sky called Jupiter, with its mass, huge mass, by far the largest planet in the entire solar system. It says that the gravity from the mass of that giant planet pulls asteroids and comets and meteorites away from the Earth toward itself. And if it weren't for that, now remember, this is what science is telling us. If it weren't for that, the thing that none of it ever even thinks about, if it weren't for that, so many meteors and asteroids and comets would hit Earth that there'd be no chance for life to exist on Earth. Now, this is what science is telling us, and that's one tiny example. And you think, well, is it possible that the Lord put that gigantic planet there specifically so that life could flourish on Earth? Well, common sense would say yes, because if it weren't there, there'd be no life on Earth. Right. But there are dozens and dozens of other things on the microscopic level. We talk about the water molecule. If the water molecule were slightly different on any level, there is no possibility of life on Earth. We take these things for granted everywhere we look, but it's only recent science that makes this super clear. So if you're a materialistic, naturalistic scientist who doesn't want to believe in anything beyond the universe, you're in trouble, because everything we know from science is pointing in that direction. So that's the most obvious kind of an example that I can give. But there's so many examples that it adds up and up and up and up to where I think they're getting very desperate, and they're coming up with crazy theories like the multiverse theory, which they say, we don't want to believe in God, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to postulate that there are an infinity of universes and that we just happen to live in the one perfect for life. I mean, that takes a million times more faith than it does believing in the God of Scripture. But some people are so hostile to the idea of a God that they're grasping at these crazy straws, you know, in order to have some credibility. But it's really gotten so bad that I want people to know what the evidence is. And again, the book is full of these examples. And when you add it up, you just think, why didn't they teach me this in school? Why isn't this on the news? This is science. This is not, you know, Christian philosophy. This is all from the world of science.
Excellent. Okay, so the founders recognize the hand of God, you know, in our universe, and they said, again, that our rights come from the Creator. Your book a few years ago, If You Can Keep It, first of all, explain the title itself, which I know comes from a quote from Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, because Franklin was such a genius. He just said this off the cuff. It's not like he planned it, but a woman comes up to him, Mrs. Powell of Philadelphia, says to him at the end of the Constitutional Convention, 1787, the end of the summer, and she says, Dr. Franklin, what have you given us, a monarchy or a republic? The idea of a self-governing republic like we have today was really unthinkable in those days, and the idea that they could go into that room and come up with the Constitution that sort of pulls it off, it was pretty far-fetched, so nobody knew that they were going to come out with a republic. So she asks him the question, and he answers, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. And it is a very, very profound statement, because what he's saying is the Constitution is worth nothing. It's a piece of paper. If we the people do not live out the freedoms enshrined in that document, given to us by God, enshrined by law in that document, if we don't live them out, the whole thing goes away. And we've come to a place in American history today where most Americans are pretty unfamiliar with these ideas of what makes us free. And that's why we've become sitting ducks for people preaching socialism or big government, because we simply have forgotten that those things are disastrous and that what we have is an amazingly fragile, rare gift from God to a people to hold high the torch of liberty for the whole world, so that the whole world could become as we are.
Can you explain the golden triangle?
I'd be delighted to. I was going to say, why don't you ask me to explain that? Because that's that's at the heart of everything. You know, it's an idea that I heard from my friend Oz Guinness. He's a dear friend, and he wrote about this in one of his books. And I was amazed when I read it. I said to myself, how is it possible I've never heard of this before? This is one of those things you just kick yourself and you think, this is crazy. This explains everything. I've never heard this in school. I never heard this in a church. And the basic idea is this. I'll say it quickly, then I'll explain it. The basic idea, the golden triangle of freedom, is that freedom requires virtue, virtue requires faith, and faith in turn requires freedom. So it goes round and round. So what it means is that freedom, which is another way of calling, it's another word for self-government, right? When I'm free to govern myself. I'm not free to live with no government. I have to be the government. I and the people of America, we have to govern ourselves. We're not going to be governed from without. We're not going to be governed from above. We're going to govern ourselves. And if we need help, we're going to elect people that we're going to choose to help us with the things that we don't have time to do ourselves. Okay, well, that's called freedom. That's called self-government. The founders said this has never worked in the history of the world. It never will work in the history of the world except for one thing, virtue. If people have virtue, if people are persuaded that they have to have virtue, then this can work. And so you say, well, what does that mean? It means that if I believe in right and wrong, if I'm a virtuous person, I don't need a government to tell me not to steal or to pay my taxes. I'm going to do those things because they're the right thing to do. I'm a virtuous person, and I believe in doing what is right. Now, if you're not that kind of a person, or if the culture is not full of those kinds of people, what's going to happen? You're going to have force. You're going to have a government forcing you to do the right thing, and you're going to need bigger and bigger government, more and more laws, more and more taxes paid to pay for the people to force you to do the right thing. The founder said, what would happen if we had a people of virtue? We then could require that we then would believe, we would, because we have virtue, we would be able to govern ourselves. We'd have freedom. We'd have liberty. So the founders said freedom requires virtue. But then they said virtue requires faith. Why would people do the right thing unless they have faith in something greater than themselves, greater than the government? If the people believe in something greater, they're listening to a higher authority. They are afraid of the higher authority and what the higher authority thinks. So if God is looking at me and he says, I don't want you to steal, I don't steal because God doesn't want me to steal, not because the government says it's wrong, because the government might say something's wrong or something's right, and they could be wrong. What God thinks and what God says and what God reveals in his word, a people who believe that will automatically be virtuous because they're trying to please God. And when you're trying to please God, you have virtue, and because of your virtue, you govern yourself. So the founders saw this, and they all wrote about it, not just John Adams or a few of them. And I quote them in my book, If You Can Keep It, because I said, we need to know that they all thought this way. This wasn't just one or two of them. They all understood that this is how self-government works. This is how America is going to work if it's going to work. But the third part of the triangle is that faith, freedom requires virtue, virtue requires faith, but faith in turn requires freedom. That's because faith cannot be coerced by the government. Faith must be free. So if the government says everybody's got to go to that church, everybody's got to go to that mosque, everybody's got to go to this temple, everybody's got to not go to church, we're going to be an atheist country. Anytime the government steps in and coerces people with regard to faith, freedom evaporates. Freedom, to be real freedom, has to extend to the religious sphere. And the funny thing, too, is that freedom, when you come to religion, it makes religion possible, because if you are forced by the government, you're not even really believing. You're just doing something you're told, just like paying your taxes or just, you know, crossing at the green light. To do it freely is the only way that it really works. It has to be something that comes from within.
Okay,
the founders saw that in the old country it didn't work, that we were forced to this church or that religion, and they knew this was the magic, and that's why when Franklin said, if you can keep it, he was saying, if you the people go along with this, we will flourish.
Okay, Eric, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Eric Metaxas Books. Metaxas is spelled M-E-T-A-X-A-S. And also, if you see Eric Metaxas Books / atheism for the new one. Eric, all the best. Thanks so much.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.